Du hører på Litteraturhusets podcast, som presenterer bearbeidede versjoner av samtaler og foredrag fra Litteraturhusets program. Du interessert I mer informasjon, kan du gå til litteraturhuset.no for oversikt over alle våre arrangementer.
Hello everyone. Welcome to today's lecture about the information war in West Africa. My name is Åse Lappegårdlan and I work with the artistic program here at the House of Literature. And this winter, we wanted to go behind the media headlines about the many protests and state coups in West African countries to learn more about the background for this and the situation on the ground. We heard from about France's history as a colonizer and how that has shaped the region and the relationship between West African countries and France. We've heard about the conflicts following the growing strength of violent extremist organizations and the instability with different global actors such as France, Russia and China, each trying to obtain control in the region, while local actors want more independence. But today we will focus on a central aspect of this growing instability and conflict level, and that is the role of media, traditional and social media, with increasing levels of disinformation, fake news and propaganda from different actors. In a region with a very young population where the majority get their news from digital channels, how does that influence public debate and opinion? We're very lucky to have with us today Samba Dialimpa-Baji. He's a PhD candidate at the Oslo Met University, where his research focuses on the role of digital media, disinformation and hate speech in armed conflicts in Ethiopia and Mali. He holds a BA in journalism and a master's degree in defense, peace and security. And he has also worked as editor-in-chief for French-speaking Africa in the fact-checking organization Africa Check. So please give him a warm welcome.
thank you, Oshil. And hello, everybody. I'm happy to be here. I worked in Senegal, where I come from, as a journalist for almost 20 years before joining Africa Check, where I worked as a fact checker, so working on disinformation, and now I'm researching disinformation. And I'm really happy to be here and to talk about this topic that is an interesting topic for my region, West Africa. So, depending on the perspective we are talking about, West Africa is whether 16 countries or 15 countries. You have the bloc ECOWAS with 15 countries, Economic Community of West African States. But if you take it as a geographical space, you will add Mauritania, which is a bit in the north, but is part of West Africa, and it was also a former member of ECOWAS that it quit a while ago. And now with the crisis in the region, even the ECOWAS bloc is shaken because three countries, Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso, have decided to quit the bloc and create their own bloc called Alliance of Sahelian States, Alliance des États du Sahel in French. And then when they announced that they're quitting, ECOWAS said, no, you can't quit because the protocol says you have to stay at least 1 year after the announcement. So we are in a big crisis in the region. And the crisis in West Africa is a multi-faceted crisis. To talk about the origin, I will just stick on the immediate origin, I would say. That is the rebellion, the Tuareg rebellion that broke in 2012 in Mali, or in northern Mali, where the group MNLA started fighting against Malian army because they wanted the northern part of Mali to be independent, called Azawad. And now the crisis has spread to other countries such as Burkina Faso and Niger. And even though some countries like Benin and Togo have witnessed some attacks from the so-called terrorist group who are active in Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso. And those countries are also experiencing socio-political crisis. A military coup occurred in Mali, another one in Niger, and also in Burkina Faso. Those countries are now led by military government, and we're seeing a civic space that is shrinking. And those countries have announced to quit the bloc. And what another aspect of this crisis is the role that digital media are playing, or media, the role that media is playing in this crisis. Because digital media have changed how the conflict has been portrayed and mediatized it. I will give an example. In Mali, when the crisis started in 2012, there was an attack in Agaloc, where the Malian army was defeated by the rebel group, and media, traditional media, have reported that there were killings of Malian militaries, and some of them had their throat cut. But what happened is, some days later, when in social media, in Facebook especially, some videos and pictures started to be shared showing the corpses of those soldiers, then demonstration broke in Bamako, and even wife of soldiers were demonstrating, heading to the presidential palace to ask the president to act and to give the army more weapons to be able to fight against the rebels. And that led to the first coup in Mali in 2012. So social media are really playing an important role in the region now, even if radio continues to be the most important media, but digital media are making an important breakthrough. And different studies show that more and more people are using social media to access information. And they're using digital media as sources of information, spaces for discussion, citizen mobilization, and civic engagement. But at the same time, those platforms are also used to share false information that can exacerbate tension in the region. The situation in Sahel is also really complex and becoming more complex because some external actors are also involved in the region. Actors like France, like China, like Russia, like the US. They used to say that they have a light footprint in the region, but they are there. We are witnessing what a fellow journalist in Cameroon has called a scramble to be Africa's window on the world. Formula really sums up what is happening in the region and the game of influence between the different external actors in West Africa. because for several years, France and Great Britain was the big players because they were the one who have colonized most of the countries in Africa and in West Africa. So in the media space, the biggest players was Radio France Internationale, RFI, and the BBC. And it was back to the colonial era because they were using radio as a tool of propaganda and also to push their policy in the colonies. For example, in France, France has created in 1931 what will became now RFI. It was called Post-Colonial. And Great Britain created BBC Empire Service that will become BBC World Service, in which there is a department dedicated to Africa. And other countries will come, like the US with Voice of America, Deutsche Welle, also broadcasting in France to target French-speaking countries. And it's important to note that now RFI, BBC, and other mainstream media, they also have services in African local languages or African languages, like Hausa, Oromia, Igbo, and for example, at the BBC, there is a language services where they even broadcasting in Pidgin. Those who know Nigeria know that Pidgin is a like sort of slang, but it's maybe the most spoken language in the country. So BBC have created a service for Pidgin. And RFI for like 4 or 5 years now, they have created a service called Fulfulde and Mandinka. The radio station is based in Dakar and broadcasting in the region, Guinea, Mali, Niger, in two languages that are Fulfulde and Mandinka. Those languages are among the language, the most spoken language in West Africa. So I will focus a little bit on the influence that French media, and especially RFI, France 24, that they have in French-speaking countries in West Africa, and even the importance that the leaders of the countries granted them. Because for a long time, RFI was the most important media that Western Africans were listening, because in their own country, there was no freedom of press. State-owned media was sort of mouthpiece of the government. So RFI was a way for them to, or for us, to have information from the outside world, but sometimes information about what is happening in our country. For instance, so when the president have important statement to make, they would go to RFI to do it. For example, the Senegalese president Macky Sall, since he's in power in 2012, he gave more interviews to RFI France 24 than local Senegalese media. If I can summarize, I would say that strictly, if it's interviews in since 2012, 12 years, it was about 6 interviews with Senegalese media. And he did more than 10 interviews with RFI France 24 and other French media outlets. So, and one example of the, how to say, the influence of French media and journalists can be symbolized with one French journalist was called Pierre Biarnès. He was the correspondent of the French daily Le Monde in West Africa, based in Dakar, for almost 20 years, from the early 60s. And he was very close to most of African president at that time. And he was so influential that one Cameroonian writer called Mongo Betty nicknamed him as Bob Donar of the press. For those who don't know Bob Donar, you can Google him, and you will see he was a big mercenary in Africa for long years, from the 60s. And I would summarize by saying he was a sort of Prigogine before Prigogine. He was a Prigogine of France in the 60s. Was really influential in Africa at that time. So now we're seeing that new players are coming in the media landscape in Africa, or in the scramble to be Africa's window on the world. There are newcomers, there are others who was here but wasn't that influential, and now they are trying to strengthen their presence. Like Russia, people used to listen many years ago Radio Moscou in French with short waves, but now they are strengthening their position with media like Russia Today and Sputnik, which have services for Africa in French and English. And when we look closely at their content, we see that, yeah, the objective is clear. It is about countering Western influence, or France in particular, and then promoting Russia. And for some people in West Africa, these media are a sort of alternative, because for them they provide a different perspective on major global issues. For example, concerning the war in Ukraine, you will see that some people are convinced that Russia is the victim, or at least it is defending themselves. And I think, without comparing the work, the same can be said for Al Jazeera, for example, which somehow also gave a different perspective for those who are familiar with following the news from French media like RFI and France 24. So, China is also strengthening its position in West Africa with its official press agency, Xinhua, that have almost or more than 20 correspondents in African countries. They have launched Radio Xin International in the 2010s. In certain countries, like they have a radio station in Senegal and broadcasting in 4 regions in the country. They're doing the same in Niger and Mauritania. They also have their television channel broadcasting globally. It was before CCTV, but now it is renamed as China Global Television Network. broadcasting in English and French. And apart from covering current affairs from a Chinese perspective, they also broadcast programs that promote Chinese culture, Chinese language. And another strategy that China has is establishing partnership with state-owned media in some African countries for content sharing, or to have some journalists from these media to go and settle in China for example, 1 year, and covering China for their own media. So, like, they will be the correspondent of a national media in China and cover what's happening in China. But it is sponsored by the government of Beijing. And there is a new player who is arriving, which is Turkey, because Turkey has made big investment in Africa, in many countries, like my country in Senegal, where they have many businesses. And so they have also a major strategy to go with this economic strategy. They had for years their national press agency, Anadolu, which is present in Africa for years. And since March 23, they have launched 100% online media called TRT and TRT Africa, which produce content in Kiswahili, English, Hausa, and French. I have almost 5 former colleagues working with them now in Istanbul, where they are based. And then, yeah, they also covering Africa from their own perspective. And TRT, BBC somehow, they have another strategy is that for the African services, they used to hire a lot of African journalists to work with them. But I want to make here one point is that it is clear that all these government or these external actors, they are using the media as a tools of soft power in Africa. But from my own perspective or my journalist perspective, it is important to stress that there is a big difference in terms of professional ethics, press freedom, freedom of expression. For instance, when I refer to Reporters Without Borders Index, we'll see that it may be subjective, but press freedom in China or in Russia is really limited, where a media like France 24, RFE, or BBC have the possibility to criticize the government, the president. I'm not sure that a media like Russia Today or Sputnik will have the same stance toward Vladimir Putin. So I think this aspect is important. But still, all those actors are really using the media as a tool of soft power. And by the way, I did not mention another initiative by Euronews. Euronews is a media, a pan-European media. And in 2016, they have launched a project, Africa News. So it was like Euronews for Africa, so Africa News. in French and English. But what was curious with the project is they have chosen to put their headquarters in Republic of Congo. And when they were launching the project, they presented it as a politically independent African media and without any ideological preference. But when we know, if we know what happened in Republic of Congo in terms of freedom of press or freedom of expression, it was a bit curious to see that Euronews have chosen to have their headquarters in Congo. But now they reside in Lyon, where Euronews is. So, as you can see, Africa is missing here because we don't see any major African media like covering African events for the outside world, if I can say so. No big Pan-African media or national media that is deployed through the continent and beyond to give an African perspective. Obviously, there are some examples like SABC, which is a South African media, Mail and Guardian, the continent. All those media are South African media. They trying to be at least be global in Africa, but still they are not. They don't have they do not have the same influence as CNN or France 24 or RFI. So they must stick on Southern Africa. There was some initiative in Africa a while ago, like PanaPress, which was a Pan-African press agency. It was really influential like 30 years ago. I remember when I started working as a journalist, PanaPress was the main source of information for the media, African media in Senegal, or Senegalese media or African media. There was biggest competitor of AFP and Reuters in Africa, and they were publishing in French, English, Portuguese, and Arabic. But the project is not working properly now, as they are experiencing management problems. So in terms of press agency, the biggest players are AFP, Reuters, and AP. Yeah. So, but the situation in West Africa, or I would say in the Sahel, because the most impacted countries by the crisis are the countries that are called Sahelian countries, Burkina Faso, Niger, Mali. So we have this confrontation or this war of influence between external powers in the media landscape. But we also witnessing this this war in the digital space. Or I would say there is also a disinformation war going on in West Africa. And some of these major external actors are also playing this war. In May 2021, there were demonstrations in Côte d'Ivoire, in Abidjan, where some people from Niger were attacked, their businesses attacked, was attacked, and there was 10 people were injured, and media have also reported that one person was killed. And it happened because there were a video that was shared on WhatsApp where you can see some people beaten by soldiers. And the video was presented on WhatsApp and social media are showing soldiers from Niger beating migrants from Cote d'Ivoire. And there was comment on Facebook, on WhatsApp, calling for reaction, even to, you know, to attack people from Niger living in Cote d'Ivoire. So this episode is shows how social media and disinformation on social media is having a real impact in the real life. Because the access of the increased access to social media also promote or facilitate the spread of falsehood that is really growing globally. But yeah, we are witnessing this in Africa. And I think the problem is, from my perspective, is more concerning in West Africa, because for many people, social media is now the only source of information for them. I remember being in a conference, in a panel, we were talking about disinformation. So the danger of disinformation, how to respond, etc. And there was that lady on the panel, and she said, what you're saying here is really interesting, but I have one question. What disinformation means for people who don't have access to information? And I think this is, for me, I don't know how to say it in English. Angle more, blind spot, yeah, of when we're talking about disinformation in Africa or in West Africa, what disinformation means for millions of people who don't have access to, information in the or in the media. So when someone, my cousin in the village, for example, he received on his, because anyone is using WhatsApp now, he received a video on WhatsApp saying that this is Senegalese that are being beaten by Malian soldiers, he will believe it because it's the only information he have access to. So, and we witnessed it with the COVID pandemic, how disinformation can have bad consequences. There is an episode about COVID-19 in Cote d'Ivoire, where when there was this argument about chloroquine, whether it's a cure or not. And in Cote d'Ivoire, some people went to cut the leaves of a neem tree because there is a legend that, they believe that chloroquine is made of neem. So they went to cut the leaves of the neem tree to boil it and drink it because maybe they don't want to bother to go and buy chloroquine, and so they had their own chloroquine. But all this came from disinformation or some false ideas that is diffused on people. So the security and instability in the region is getting worse, really, in Burkina Faso, in Mali, in Niger. Disinformation is now everywhere. Social media, Facebook and WhatsApp, even on mainstream media. And with the coup, the military government are now really using the national media, and especially national television, as tools of propaganda. And they're also contributing in spreading false information, even in national television. And so when we study disinformation, we will see that ordinary internet users, influencers, government, external actors are also involved in the spread of disinformation. For example, in Mali, there are these influencers that are called video men. So they have Facebook account or sometimes YouTube account, and they will do live videos on Facebook to comment on every issue and also spreading false information. And now in Niger, Burkina Faso, and especially in Mali, they are used as mouthpiece for the government. And because they have like sort of freeway, because the government has suppressed all the dissent voices, and they only let all the influencers supporting them using social media to spread the narrative, and even to attack all people who are critical against the government. And for example, in Mali, you will see that now journalists are, or at least the journalists who are critical against the government, they are afraid now to speak. I had some conversation with some journalists in Mali, and they say that they are afraid to speak now. They prefer not to talk about the political situation in the country. So these video men or influencers before the putches happened in those countries, some of them were in the payroll of politicians because they were already been used by politicians before, and now they are working for the military government. And in Mali, Niger, especially Burkina Faso, they are now used to push the anti-France narrative. And in Mali, before the UN mission leave the country, there was also attacked by those influencers. Sometimes they say that the UN mission is working with the jihadist group who are perpetrating attacks in the country. So we also see that the journalists are really now they are not anymore the big players in the information space, and they are replaced by those influencers, and it is worsening the situation regarding disinformation. And at the same time, we are witnessing a war of influence in social media between France and Russia. And an event that can really sum up this war of influence happened on April 2020 with the so-called Gossi mass grave affair. So what happened is that Gossi is an area in the north of Mali where the French army had a military base. So when they had problems with the Malian military government, so they decided, no, it's Malian that asked France to leave. So when they leave, they left the base of Gossi, and this military base was now taken over by Wagner Group and Malian military. So what happened that day is that there was a Twitter profile who posted a blurred picture where we can see some corpses. And on the comment, he suggested that French military have killed many civilians and buried them in a mass grave. One day after, the French military communication service, they published on social media, Twitter, Facebook, a video shot by a drone. And they so on the video, we can see some people in uniform burying some corpse. And they explained it, so the French military said that they shot the video that shows Wagner Group mercenaries were burying those people who was killed to accuse France of killing civilians. And yeah, obviously the Russian government and Malian government, they denied that. And Malian government say that they will investigate the case. But until now, there is no result of the investigation. And until now, nobody really knows what really happened. And nobody knows who is telling the truth. So this episode really is really an illustration of the disinfluence war between Russia and France. And this is not only the only event related to this war of influence, but this rhetoric, this anti-France rhetoric, even if it does not explain the anti-France sentiment in Africa, because I think there are other roots with that, but it has also, it produced some effects on the ground. For example, in 2021 in Niger and Burkina Faso, there were a French military convoy that was leaving Burkina Faso to reach Mali. And this convoy was blocked by people in Burkina Faso first and in Niger. And even in Niger, three people were killed during this demonstration, because people have been fed by rumors that France is helping the terrorist groups. And the same thing happened with the UN mission. They observed that in some places, when they operating villages would come out and demonstrate, or even they block the convoy. Because in Mali as well, there was these rumors, even spread by influential figures, saying that the UN mission was working with the terrorist groups. And I think that also led the UN mission to leave the country, even though it's the Malian government who asked for that, because in Mali there were days of demonstrations, rallies to ask the UN mission to leave. Russian influence operations in West Africa, and particularly in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, are well documented by several reports and studies. Yes, mainly done by Western organization. And this operation relies on digital space, but also offline space. So how they operate is that they would have several pages on Facebook that will push the pro-Russian and anti-France narrative. And offline, there are some civil society movement that will organize anti-France demonstration on the ground. And the same trend was observed first in Mali. Mali was the entry gate of Russia and Wagner in West Africa, and then in Burkina Faso and Niger. And they really use the same tactic, the same method that they already use in Central African Republic, which was the gateway to Wagner Group in Africa. In Central African Republic, they even founded some media to push their influence and to try to counter the French influence. But yeah, obviously it's not only Russia, even though everyone is talking about Russia. France also carries out its influence operation on social media, even using the media. For example, in December 2020, Facebook announced that it had to take down three networks for what they called coordinated inauthentic behavior that target communities across Africa, and including Niger, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Mali. And Facebook said at that time, they said that one of the networks, so the networks of several Facebook pages, were associated with the French military. So they were actually pushing the narrative on how good France is for the Sahel, how important is the French military operation in Mali, etc., etc. And in addition to that, in 2020, Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, has called the French ambassadors to better use France Media Monde network, which is the parent of RFI and France 24, to assume a strategy of influence, particularly in Africa, to counter Russian and Chinese Turkish narrative. Even though journalists from those media made a statement to say that it's not part of their work to be the masterpiece of France. But Macron has expressed this need to use the media to as a tool of influence. And as a consequence, in these three countries, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, all the French media, France 24, RFI, even some newspapers like Le Monde, have been suspended in those three countries because they are accused of disseminating false information and propaganda. Okay. Thank you. So that was sort of overview of the situation in West Africa regarding information and disinformation war with all these external actors who are present in West Africa. I was talking about the US. So the curious thing is that Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, or even in other countries, there were demonstrations to ask France military to leave, but nobody asking for US military to leave because they also have military presence in Africa. When there was the putsch in Niger, the first thing the new rulers, the military government did is to ask the French military to leave. But at the same time, they had a US military base in Niger, where they have a drone base and military base that they're using for their activity in the Sahel. But they never asked the US to leave. So maybe, there is this war of influence. But regarding France, I think there are also other roots, colonial roots, that can explain also how the anti-France narrative is having a biggest impact than other narrative. Because in West Africa, we did not have, I would say, bad experience with other actors like Russia, China, Turkey. So that can explain why people are not reacting the same with these countries compared to how they are reacting regarding France. So, thank you very much.
Du har hørt på Litteraturhusets podcast som presenterer bearbeidede versjoner av samtaler og foredrag fra Litteraturhusets program. Del gjerne podcasten med familie og venner via iTunes eller SoundCloud om du liker det du har hørt. Følg oss også på Facebook og på litteraturhuset.no for informasjon om flere aktuelle arrangementer. Musikken laget av Apotek.